Good morning and welcome to part two of your Scorpio reading. Last night after I completed part one, I looked at my browser and my email, and there was obvious news about what happened in Paris coming in every which way, and would not be able to proceed without at least acknowledging that this morning and acknowledging it as a reality of the times that we are living in, basically times of perpetual war. We don't really see it that way very often, but I would just say again that the summer that I was born in March, and in August of 64, the Vietnam War began officially, having gone on for 10 years unofficially, and it's been nonstop war ever since. Also want to acknowledge the people who have birthdays today or right around now. It is terrible to have something like this happen on your anniversary. My godmother was born on April 4th, and on one of her birthdays, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, and I often think about that and remember them both on the same day. They were kindred spirits. The astrology of last night's incident mostly reveals Eris and the Uranus-Eris conjunction as the, what you might say, the trigger point. But there is something meaningful in here for us in the Saturn-Neptune square, and I was planning to begin the discussion this morning with the Saturn-Neptune square, and then move on to the Saturn-Chiron square, both of which involve Saturn moving through Sagittarius, your second house. And I've given some thought to that in the previous section, talking about the need to be disciplined in the concentration of your resources. So typically, resources of any kind, be it wealth or paintings or whatever, are not developed or acquired haphazardly. There is a conscious plan, there is a structure, there is maintenance. I collect guitars. They must be maintained. Each one is a commitment. I can't just let anyone languish. They must be tuned regularly and taken care of. And this is a relatively modest type of thing, but it takes consciousness. And any time we're going to develop ourselves in some way, like music, you have to take care of the instruments and practice on them and play on them. And it is the same thing with all resources. And what Saturn in Sagittarius is saying is that it is time to be disciplined about your resources. And this includes the resource of self-esteem. Second house is the house of self-value, self-worth, as in the available resources concept of the second. And so as the second evolved from, you know, your farming tools, basically, to our psychological model of astrology, the main resource that we have is the respect that we have for ourselves. And it's very, very hard times for self-respect. I don't, you know, remember this from too many other lifetimes. I can only really comment on one of my previous ones on the theme of self-respect, but I will say that surveying the world now and speaking to many people, older and younger, mostly women, but a good few men also, it really doesn't matter how old someone is. The crisis of self-respect is huge at the moment, and we have, it seems, very nearly every possible influence trying to prove to us that we really don't have self-respect so that we can get that new deodorant or that new drug or that new Mercedes to buy some self-respect. And Saturn through the second will present challenges of self-respect. And it is as if at every turn you must make each decision based on how much you respect yourself. And there are ways to slip in this, because the framework in which you are making the decision of whether to respect yourself is in itself very likely to be a compromised environment. And with Sagittarius on the second, I would recommend a very thorough inventory of the impact of religion on your self-esteem. Now, I say this speaking to an audience that typically considers itself spiritual rather than religious, but I would point out that much of modern spirituality is just a kind of a sweetened up repackaging of religion, and that there is extraordinary damage being done to the planet right now by religious beliefs. And when, for example, we look at the kind of an incident that occurred in Paris, a city where people insist that they are not under the thrall of religion, but when you sit on the metro and look at the map of the stations, fully half or a third of the stations begin with the name Saint. And that in itself would be fine. Nothing wrong with it, right? They're names, basically, and so they're evocative of archetypes, which is what saints are. Except that to deny that is, it compounds the problem. And we live in times of religious fundamentalism when a few people seem to be the ones out on the forefront. A few people seem to be the ones delivering the message, or the jihad, or the bombs, or the shootings in the theaters, or the beheadings in the case of this guy, Jihadi John, who the United States claims to have taken out yesterday. But what happens is that the rest of society just kind of hums along. And so while you have your political leaders, whether it's Osama bin Laden or George W. Bush, going along with what the clerics are telling them, because these people are always answering to religious clerics, basically. We don't recognize the extent of the power of the religious right wing in the United States. We project it onto the Muslim world, but we don't acknowledge it in the United States. This can only happen when there's a vast number of people who are superstitious about going against religion in some way, going against their own personal religious background, going against what their parents believe, and basically who hum along. And this humming along right now is facilitating a world war. We don't want to think that it was the Christian response to 9/11 to begin bombing Afghanistan and Iraq, but I assure you, that's what it was. And though very few of us would say that, would agree with that, that was the power source of political will to do that. And on a cultural level, we are living in this, and it would appear at this point that we are going in deeper. But there is a parallel between personal astrology that we're experiencing now in the form of Saturn square Neptune and collective astrology, which is one way to look at Saturn square Neptune, particularly with Saturn and Sag, is that there is pretty much no better illustration for the challenging of religious dogma. You couldn't illustrate religious dogma better than Saturn in Sagittarius. It's the very picture of it. And now that influence, moving through your second, testing your self-esteem, testing your respect for yourself, testing your faith in yourself, right? Because on the clearest level, Sagittarius is about faith. Your faith in your survival, your faith in your goodness, your faith in your belonging in this life. And on the most shadow kind of encrypted level, Saturn in Sag is about dogma. And there are many kind of filters that Saturn in Sagittarius is likely to put you through. And they include filtering out your own dogmas, judgments that you have about yourself, judgments that you have about people, judgments that you have about sex, whether it be your own or your feelings or what anyone else does, judgments you have about money, your sense of purpose, that is a second house resource. And you might view Saturn moving through the second house as an experience of running all of your ideas, thoughts, and feelings through an increasingly fine series of filters and being left with something of the true essence of your faith in existence. But judging yourself for anything is not a measure of your faith in existence. And your faith in yourself, which also is your faith in existence, is the only thing that can lead to what you might think of as whole relationships or relationships where healing is the primary agenda. Now, many of you in your responses to my query have talked about relationships, and that's a very common thing. When you ask anybody what they want from astrology, they pretty much are going to say, I want to know about relationships and work and money. And so we can talk about all three in one aspect pattern, in that Saturn square Neptune is the thing that is kind of running your chart for the next year or so. And it is doing so through two very important houses, the second and the fifth. The second is the extension of the first, that's Scorpio. Oops. The dogs is talking.
Hey, dogs. Come on. I'm talking to these Scorpio people. Yeah.
That was Henrietta. Okay, so you relate to others through your resource of self-respect. And when relationships go bad, what's likely to be happening is that you are encountering people through some resource other than self-respect. That could be perhaps through judgment or doubt or some very likely to be parental filter that was kind of inserted into you through some authority. And the healing journey is a journey of gaining self-respect. The spiritual journey is the journey of making contact with your own ideas, your own interpretations of the miracles that you've experienced, your own determination of what love means to you and what it means to you to love. And this connects to your survival, another second house matter. And it relates to your ability to have negotiating power. And that negotiating power usually comes from some sense of connection and the true presence of your self-respect. Now, where relationships are involved, Scorpio has as its opposite sign Taurus, one of the more seemingly solid and stable signs of the zodiac, right? The kind of the rock You might think of Taurus that way. And it's true that many Taurus people do have this oak tree-like quality and presence. But even oak trees change every day. They grow or they die. And this placement of Taurus opposite your sun leads to what you might think of as an expectation that relationships are going to be a certain way, that there's a certain model of what you might think of as utter permanent stability in relationships. But the thing about Taurus is that it is actually a lot more volcanic than most people recognize, that when you get close to Taurus people and when you dive into the ancient literature on Taurus, you find out that this actually is more about the sign of constant change than it is the sign of stability. It's one of the paradoxes of Taurus. There's a fabricating quality that Taurus has that's illustrated by Alice Bailey as Vulcan in his blacksmithy pounding on the hot iron with the smoke and the sweat and the dirt and grime and the ashes. And out of that shop, that blacksmith shop, comes the soul. And the major presence in Taurus right now is Sedna. Sedna is a planet with an orbit of approximately 11,000 years. So it is a thing called a scattered disk object. It's the only thing that we know of in the scattered disk right now, with the possible exception of Eris, which is kind of halfway between a scattered disk object and a trans-Plutonian object. Eris will factor in a few moments. And the story of Sedna is the story of a kind of perfectionism in relationships. You may feel that you are treated this way. You may see your own ideas about others reflected back to you in a kind of perfectionism in relationships, the sensation that nobody's really good enough for you. And right now, all of that is cast into the sea, because the real activity in your chart with relationships is taking place in your fifth house. The fifth house is not the house of what you might think of as formal, established, contractual partnerships. That's the role of the seventh and the eighth. The fifth is the house of an experiment. And I would dare to say that after a certain age, not very old, most people are done experimenting in their relationships. And they want what they want, and they have an expectation that that's the way it's going to be. And it's no longer strictly a creative or experimental endeavor, but rather relationships are a thing that is in the high 80-90 percentiles about expectation. And that's different from what your charts are talking about, because your charts are talking about experiments, creative experiments in relating. And the creative experiments in relating appear from the astrology to be proportionally scaled with your own quest for self-esteem, which is saying, translated slightly, that the better you feel about yourself, the more willing to experiment you will be. And the less good you feel about yourself, the more you will cling to old forms, most of which have been given to you through various religious dogmas and doctrines. And I say this despite, you know, what religion you may be, or whether you think you were raised a secular Jew. The teachings of religion impact every person in a society, and we are profoundly influenced in our culture by Judaism, by Protestantism, by Catholicism, and by paganism. Not the right word for it, but we are kind of a composite of all of those things. And many of them have very rigid dogmas. And so you might say the measure of your influence by religion is equal to the measure of how rigid your ideas about relationship are. Your ideas about sex, your ideas about the meaning of sex. I had one person recently say to me that she had no association of there being anything friendly about lusty feelings, that they were always toxic and hostile. This is a value that must be examined. This is not the kind of thing that will lead to happiness. It's like saying, I have no positive associations with food. It's always about poison and punishment. One must check that out, look at it carefully, in order to have any nourishment, emotional or otherwise, from food. Food will be poisoned if it's thought of as being poisoned. And so it's difficult, but necessary, to map out the parameters of your belief. What do you think is extreme? Where does the line of appropriate go? Who is in the spectrum of relational behavior? Who is appropriate and who is not? By which I mean people kissing on the street, or kissing on the subway, or talking about sex in public. Where are your lines of demarcation? Where are your personal boundaries and your personal borders? This is the kind of adventure of Saturn in the second in Sag square, many planets in Pisces in the fifth. Because the fifth wants to stretch boundaries. The fifth wants an experiment. The fifth house, especially Pisces, is not saying, oh, well, that's what my grandmother said is true. I don't feel like doing that. No, the fifth in Pisces might want to take mushrooms and see what it's like to have sex on mushrooms. I don't know. Maybe that's not what it is for you. Maybe the fifth is you want to have a dance hall and be with your partner in on the stage of a dance hall and have your own private dance recital for two, whatever it may be. The fifth wants to go beyond conventional boundaries. It wants to go beyond conventional ideas of what is right and wrong, what is art, what is music, what is creative, and make its own experience of these things. And were there not six really potent points in Pisces right now, Pisces being the place where you relieve pressure, as I mentioned in the first segment, Saturn through Scorpio put you under a lot of pressure, and the place that you were most likely to relieve that pressure was the fifth, the house of experimenting, sex, art, play, pleasure, adventure of some kind. And Saturn moving through Sagittarius in the second is likely to increase that, because now there's not a trine, there's a square, and the square is like a real squeeze. The square is it's no longer an optional engagement like a trine, an optional place where you can seek some solace or growth or something like that. The square becomes an enforced quality. And so what you learned about expressing yourself during Saturn in Scorpio, you will now have more impulse to use, more necessity, and a kind of an urgency as time goes on, as the pressure comes on, as the need to set yourself free from the past becomes ever more real. And this is happening in a series of planetary aspects. One of them is a bit in the past, Saturn square Nessus, which was, I think, an engagement with your perhaps darkest ideas about what sex and creativity are about. I mean, we are very casual about judging sex. I would remind you that not that long ago, our society was very casual about saying that Satan was going to seize us if we were to dance with people. I mean, like, just good old, I don't mean like the dance of the Orishas. I mean just going out dancing. For what for us would look like Leave It to Beaver was being judged by religious fanatics among us. And so when we talk about something even more taboo, which is sex. But of course, dance was bad because dance was perceived to lead to sex, which it does. The boundary lines in our society between wholesome and unwholesome sex are being blurred. And they're being blurred by both sides of the major political spectrum, which you might think of as the religious right wing on one side and the allegedly ultra-liberal feminist scholars, so-called, on the other side. Both are attempting to convince us that all sex is abuse. And there was a, you know, exciting series of little crises that came along with Saturn square Nessus. Now we have Saturn square Neptune. That's a gentler but more persistent influence. And Neptune in Pisces in the fifth is the very image of letting your mind and your imagination go anywhere. And Saturn squaring Neptune is doing a combination of pushing, limiting, testing, squeezing that. And that factor of letting your imagination go anywhere can apply to any facet of your life, but in the style of the fifth in particular, where pleasure is concerned. And so you might say that Saturn square Neptune, with the fifth and Pisces involved, is about pleasure anxiety. This is a curiously American thing, right? It's kind of like the banjo. The banjo comes from one part of the world, and then it ends up in the United States and becomes its own thing, its own sound. Pleasure anxiety was not invented in the United States of America, but it sure was perfected here. And our work ethic has a lot to do with pleasure anxiety. Our whole judgment trip around sex and relationships has a lot to do with pleasure anxiety. Saturn square Neptune, with Pisces in the fifth involved, is saying, it is now time to figure this thing out. What are you actually dealing with when it comes to pleasure anxiety, and what will you let yourself feel? How far will you let yourself go? And this involves creative pleasure, right? By which I do not mean to exclude anything, but I do mean to exclude, include all forms of pleasure seeking that might be subjected to the judgment of, oh, that's too much. You shouldn't play your guitar 5 hours a day. That's just too much. For example, why paint? What good is that for anyone? Why sketch? Well, we seem to think we're past the times when someone can judge someone else for sketching in their fucking sketchbook. But I would propose to you that we're not necessarily as far along as we think, especially as individuals, and that particular form of guilt that we can experience when it comes to indulging things like art, like music, or theater, or sex, because we merely like them. And so this is less about society's judgments and more about what you've internalized. And that's, you know, that's the question. And what's really trying to happen is that the concentrated, kind of oblique and difficult to define but heavy thought forms of Saturn and Sagittarius are meeting something far more powerful than themselves, which is the basic, inherent, creative impulse. The imagination. The desire to feel. And zombies dislike nothing more than anything who feels, anyone who feels. Should never trust someone who does not like dogs, because dogs are happy. If you don't like dogs, you object to happy entities. And it helps to make friends with dogs to be happier, because dogs will teach you how to be exuberant. They will teach you how to love unconditionally. And so there is illustrated here this kind of melting away. You might say that God is going to be spelled backwards now as Saturn makes the squares to Neptune. And those dogmas are going to have a hard time staying inflated. And that hard time with those dogmas staying inflated may make some people, things, and organizations angry. Because they are merely dogmas. They have very little life of their own. They are not powered by something organic. They are, in a sense, synthetic, reductionistic, toxic products. But they have been, like PCBs and dioxins, injected into everyone. And so the response we may see to Saturn square Neptune collectively is a kind of exaggeration of dogma, a clinging to it, like a drowning person flails around in the water. That's what we saw in Paris last night. And for you, the inner ecology of this is sublime. It is the day-by-day choice of allowing those coatings of dogma, of rigid philosophy, of self-judgment to melt off in what may seem like unnoticeably thin layers. And when that is progressed along to a certain point, then comes Saturn square Chiron. And Saturn square Chiron is the more direct, bold, and honest confrontation with parental authority. And with Chiron in the fifth, you are likely to feel the impulse in these years, it's a long transit, but not long enough, to want to do all the things your parents said were bad. And with Saturn square Chiron, you might just exactly get bash into within yourself all the judgments and restrictions of all of those parental entities, whether they be substitute entities like churches or corporations, or whether they be direct entities like actual humans, like parents, perhaps living, perhaps not, and partners who often incarnate in the form of the parents that we had. And so I would suggest that you prepare for a kind of an adventure that will involve some conflict, but a lot of creative ways to resolve conflict in your own favor or in mutual benefit of others. But the thing is that really your job is not to appease them, and there's no compromise between the judgment about art and art. None at all. There is no compromise between someone who says that Rodin painted pornography and someone who appreciates art. There simply is none. The objectors must be escorted from the gallery. It's just not, there's no meeting of these viewpoints. And so as you feel what may be an increasing desire, need, urge, passion for experimentation and expression in whatever form, you may also encounter at the same time the judgments about that, the inserted, injected governing devices into you, the things that you were told about yourself. And as you do this, as you encounter that in this, what may be this very tangible way in terms of a specific project, you may decide to record a CD, make a painting, learn a sport, whatever it may be, you will very likely have to actually unravel the apparatus of oppression in the process of doing that. This is why art is good for self-esteem. This is why loving sex is good for self-esteem, because it sets us free of the judgments on ourselves and makes it necessary to create a space where we can be alive, and that is the whole thing. There's nothing else that you would ever possibly want to come to astrology for, is to except to be reminded and to have experiences and to be shown possible options for how you can feel alive and like you belong here on this planet. And there is an interesting dance that will happen with many of your, you know, let's say best properties. Because one thing going on during this Scorpio season, and I'll conclude with this perhaps, is that planets are moving from Virgo into Libra. And this has been happening for a few weeks. The lunar nodes have reversed directions, which is a good thing because it will remind you of all that was in Virgo, Mars and Venus and Jupiter when it changes signs over the summer. But there's another trend of planets moving toward Libra, particularly Venus and Mars. And that is going to require you to really tap into your imagination and to look deep within yourself rather than primarily looking to experience, in the first instance, to find the motives within yourself, to let your inner awareness lead you to new adventures. Now, there's other ways for this to happen. I mean, it is equally likely that adventures will lead you to inner awareness. So I would just revise that and say, know what you're doing. Respect the balance between those things. And that it is okay, it is excellent to experiment and let that lead you to inner awareness. And yet with Venus and Mars moving through your 12th, there's a number of things that can happen there, one of which is the sense of something having gone missing. And I would encourage you to seek that missing thing the moment that you notice it's missing. And this is really the name of the tune, is to notice certain feelings have gone missing, to notice that certain desires have gone missing. They are not gone missing forever. Almost on the level of an exercise, because as they pass through Libra, they're going to reemerge in Scorpio very shortly, and so those transits will happen to you. And Mercury is already there, and Mars is going to spend a lot of time in Scorpio, and I'll cover that in astrology afterthoughts, because I don't want to cloud up what I've said here too much. But ultimately, when we're talking about the fifth house and corresponding 11th house opposite that, in your case, Pisces is the fifth and Virgo is the 11th, we're talking about having actual experiences, not working in theory. Those experiences can be anything as long as the experience is direct, sensory, tactile, and intended toward loving, creative pleasure. And if I say nothing else about your charts, that would be enough, that there is something about your life now that is about the completely liberated expression of curiosity about what makes you feel good and what you want to make. And the relationship piece, which is where I started this sort of long and circuitous tangent, is this. With Taurus on the seventh house, you are likely to have a kind of an obsession with stability and perhaps a perfectionism in relationships. But that's not where the action in your chart is now. The action in your chart is in the experiment. And the only way to really have the experiment is to let go of perfectionism and to let go of expectations. And this is being demonstrated a good few ways, including Saturn encountering all these Pisces planets. Something is going to give. And the easiest thing to give, the easiest thing to give up or offer up, as we used to say, is dysfunctional belief, dogma, judgment, along with the pleasure of dysfunctional belief, neurosis, dogma, judgment. They carry a kind of anal retentive pleasure. And I would encourage you to seek your pleasure elsewhere. Seek your pleasure in opening, in expression, in allowing, in embracing the love and the pleasure of others. And lifting yourself off of perhaps the the petty wavelength of jealousy and control. It's not serving you. And the greatest benefit of Saturn in Sagittarius is that it is likely to help you see the things that you want to outgrow in a form tangible enough to actually recognize them and outgrow them. And many adventures will ensue. Okay, that was part two. I'm going to go record some music with my friends. We're working on the musical pieces for Vision Quest. It began as a CD, and then it will become astrology readings. They're underway. I've been looking at a lot of charts for 2016. The most interesting thing for you that I haven't mentioned yet, as hinted at a second ago, is Mars retrograde, which goes from Sag to Scorpio. It is very interesting. It is interesting for everyone because it really takes that question of religion versus biology and puts it under the microscope. Okay, I will catch you in a digital instant. With love.